Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We've kind of covered the resolutions. We've kind of given you a lot of details and a lot of facts regarding what Madison and Jefferson were really trying to do. And they were trying to, and maybe they weren't necessarily going out to try to create an example of what we need to do, but that's what they did. They provided us somewhat of a blueprint, an outline of what we have to do when the federal government goes well beyond. And as Madison said, when their measures are willful, you can clearly see that the federal government is willfully violating the Constitution and doing things directly. I mean, social engineering, the education program and the curriculum, you cannot look at that as a, you know, a feel-good moment that the federal government is really on the high road doing what is best for the sovereignty of the people and the sovereignty of the states. Absolutely not. They are serving themselves in trying to protect their movement towards communism. That is the deep state. The question is, why hasn't anybody ever recognized this up until now, up until the past few years? I mean, people have pointed to, and they've said, this is that. This is going on, but nobody has come up with what we need to do and pointed to Madison and Jefferson. There are the groups out there that call for nullification. 10th Amendment Center, the John Birch Society. And what they're basically doing is they are pushing for us to, you know, do marginal things that will not fix the problem. Nullification has been used for centuries. The South used nullification until they recognized that it would not work. Their paradigm was incorrect. And the problem with the South was that they couldn't get the states to, you know, acquiesce on their issues. Because why? Because we were actually divided over the issues of the South. We were heading, as Mason said, we were going to have calamities and punishments from heaven. I'm going to get into this Bolshevik Revolution. I've been talking about this for a while. So you're going to want to listen to this show because this is kind of our marketing show. And after today, we will dive into Madison's veto on the bonus bill. Then we'll basically follow up with Monroe's veto of the similar bill and Andrew Jackson's veto of a similar bill. You are listening to the only show that provides you the academic evidence necessary for us to get engaged in a solution. I'm not here to entertain. I hope you find learning entertaining. I hope you enjoy the fact that we are providing you the historical facts to help you understand, you know, how we can start connecting the dots and how we can start engaging in solving our problems. Because if we're not solving the problems, then we're just a part of the problem. And anybody that's sitting here rambling on and on and on and on and on without a historical context and without the intent of saying, why aren't you getting involved in Republic Review? Why are you not getting involved in calling for an audit of the Constitution? Because if you didn't understand what the heck is going on, is all unconstitutional. Now, okay, that's maybe that's a brass statement. I don't think so. I am going to tell you that we covered those topics regarding the fact that, and we'll get into that. I'll save that for when we get there because I don't want to duplicate this. The show was sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And so one of the things we kind of want to make sure you focus on is what we've got coming up. And after we do these vetoes, we'll cover the Madison's letter to John G. Jackson. And then we're going to dive into Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And actually, I've changed my position on this. We're going to dive into the entire 14th Amendment. I've got an article coming out regarding Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It's kind of a mini book because at this point in time, I think it's over 10 pages. And so you're going to want to read this, though, because this builds upon all of the other articles that I have provided you and why Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is key. Now, I haven't said this probably in a few days, but please point your like-minded friends in this direction. If you do that, they will start getting the message and they will hear me say, hey, point your like-minded friends towards Republic Review. Get them to start understanding, first off, the simplicity of this concept. The Constitution is merely a compact. That's it. It's not some noble guide of governance. It's not something that, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, puts their hands upon and waits for, you know, some oracle visions or delusions in feeling how they can migrate their agendas into their rulings. Because that's what we've been dealing with. We've been dealing with a runaway federal government in every aspect. The Supreme Court has ran away with powers that they do not possess. Congress has been exercising powers that they don't possess. And the President of the United States is executing laws that are unconstitutional. Every single president, even Reagan, has been exercising laws that are unconstitutional. And are they willing to stop doing it? They think these things are good. They think that centralized powers and the powers that they've usurped are good. This is why we've got to get this message out. We've got to actually start stating the facts and being on the high road saying, you do not have these powers. This is why the dark red states, I mean, I was talking to Bob Schultz the other day, and I was telling him that the only hope the blue states have based on our timeline is the dark red states creating the movement necessary. He didn't necessarily want to agree, but he does agree. We don't have the time, and that if there's going to be any movement that shakes, that shifts the axis of this country away from this subjugation and globalism and moves us back towards the direction of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, who can't agree that we are dependent on these dark red states? Trevor Lawton is in the United States because he recognizes that the United States is the thing that will keep the world from shifting to the global communist movement. I am doing the exact same thing because I happen to live in a blue state and I happen to recognize that the only thing that's going to save America are the dark red states. I'm going to have a conversation with Trevor Lawton tomorrow. I'm going to have a conversation with him to help him kind of understand and the importance in getting behind this. For somebody that did not understand the Constitution very much, when I first started talking to him, he really didn't understand the Constitution. Just like Ayn Rand, just like, what's that guy's name? Jordan Peterson. There's all of these really brilliant people that are absolutely right in what they're asserting, but they do not understand this concept of, you know, our form of Republican form of government, our form of constitutionally limited powers, not general powers. There are these little aspects that Trevor didn't get. And so when I started dealing with him, the guidance he was receiving was, we think this is a movement for a constitutional convention. But because we were friends and because we kind of had, even before we met, we already had, his wife and I already had some connection via Glenn Beck. See, back in 2013, when I started writing my book, I started pinging and pointing to Glenn Beck, hey, you need to look at Madison's veto. You need to understand that Madison wrote a point paper, a one-page letter to Congress to clarify that Congress cannot usurp any of these powers. And this is because Glenn Beck was kind of accepting the fact that the federal government has done this and there's nothing we can do. And so I was trying to get him to understand Republic Review, trying to get him to at least acknowledge, wow, okay, here are some great precedents by three presidents, starting off with Madison. So unbeknownst to me, Glenn Beck had a research team. Well, the young lady that was doing the research for Glenn Beck at that time she wasn't Trevor Lawton's wife, but Trevor Lawton started, engaging, meeting, and spending some time with Glenn Beck, and he actually met his future wife. They fell in love, but she was the one that actually did the research. So when I gave my presentation in 2016 to the Constitution Association, and I pointed out the importance and the profound importance of this concept of Madison's veto of 1817, she just got all giddy. She goes, oh, I know all about that. I know this. And then she told me the backstory, and I go, well, I'm the guy that got Glenn Beck to have you do that research. It's a small world, my friend. So when we come back, we're going to dive into some very important things regarding the Bolshevik Revolution. This is the marketing that we're going to do. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
All right, well, let's really start with this. Look around our shoulders, look over your shoulders, look behind you, look around what's going on in America, not just at the street level, but look at what's going on in what I will call the shining light of propaganda. There are subtexts that are occurring that everybody's kind of looking at it and going, oh no, really? And I'm telling you that these are parts of the indoctrination, paradigm shift, and those types of things, how they are gaining ground. And I'm going to focus strictly on the elitist sports leagues, the NFL, if you haven't noticed this, the NFL is ratcheting down their involvement regarding social justice. You've seen what's happened to Drew Brees. You're seeing all of these other people that took stands before that they are going to support. All of a sudden, they're saying, you know, this is a bad incident. And you know what? Bad incidents are going to happen tomorrow. But in the magnitude of bad incidents, they're only focused on propagating information regarding one specific narrative. And that narrative is a divisive narrative to undo our constitutional republic. And these dolts, these idiots, have no clue to what they are doing. They are working together, and they've co-opted those who think that they're patriotic. They have co-opted those who have resisted within the NFL league by not taking a knee or what have you. They have co-opted them into believing that Black Lives Matter as a part of our government. Our government and our Constitution has no, and should not, since the Civil War, has no biases towards any race or towards any state, towards anything. The problem is that we've got these things of opportunists that are trying to use division. Here's the thing. If you take a stand for one thing and one thing only, then you have become divisive. The only position that the high road, and this is a very narrow high road, that those who are on the high road will take a stand on is unifying, not saying black lives, brown lives, any lives. The high road is and will always be all lives matter, which means that you now put your arms around this concept of abortion. You put your arms around all of the immorality that our society is projecting in the world. And that is it. The high road does not become divisive in stating for one thing. You know, I'll get to that in a second. I've already stated regarding the NBA and their social justice, openly supporting the Chinese communism and the Chinese slavery, and actually supporting slavery by getting people to be subjugated to the states. Now, remember, the one thing Obama did not necessarily do is he did not formalize a national police force. Will Trump do it? Because you got to understand, it is always the opposite party that you think would even, you know, try to do something like that. And they're looking and they're pointing to, and it seems like everybody is calling on the unconstitutional National Guard. They're a bunch of mercenaries. They're a bunch of people that work for the federal government, that the states are not owned as assets. These are, if you want to call it, this is the National Guard should have never been stood up. We should have formally organized militias, and we should have maintained the integration of militias. But people did not understand the context of militias within the Constitution. So this is why we've got this real problem. Anyway, we must openly rebuke these positions that these social elitists, these communist elitists in these sports programs are taking. We must actually call them out for what they are. They're promoting the subversion of the Constitution. These folks are poking and pointing to the Constitution, and they are hypocrites. Not on the basis of race, but on the basis of our Constitution and liberty. If you start understanding how people want to extract justice and start creating an uneven field, because there are a lot of black activists that are a part of the Black Lives Matter. This is a part of the Communist Party. Antifa, even though people look at Antifa as a, let's just call it an anarchy movement, they're not. They are tools for the Communist movement. They are the ones that are going to work and actually help people come to the idea, oh, you know what, we need government to stop this and allow government to continue to allow our constitutional rights to be violated as these folks get government to start, you know, going down these paths of injecting laws and taking away our liberties. The fact of the matter is, the Constitution is really clear on what we need to do. And so I've talked to you about protests and your constitutional right. Your constitutional right is to petition government. Peaceably assemble does not mean to peaceably assemble where you are blocking other people. When you're out in the streets or you're out on a sidewalk and you create a crowd where you're just standing there, but you're blocking people from being able to traverse an area to get to their point, the places of business, you know, to be able to commit commerce and to be able to go to their family and so forth, you are violating their civil rights. The framers were very clear. You know, you do not have a right. Your rights end where another person's begin. So this is why in the First Amendment, our First Amendment right is very specific. Our First Amendment right is to petition government for the addressing of our grievances. You got grievances? That's what you're supposed to do. You don't actually go out and try to persuade the public to surrender. That it doesn't matter. Even if the public does say we want to give up our liberties, the only answer is you can't. You have to amend the Constitution. Anytime the government violates the Constitution by making changes, by creating laws that take away some of your gun privileges, which are actually rights, not privileges, but they call them privileges, then they are violating the Constitution. We've got to quit begging the government to violate the Constitution. And I know you get this. This is why the red states are that important. This is why I was talking about this. Before I move on, one thing I want to point out is that if you're voting for a rhino, then you're basically voting for somebody who is working with the progressives in undermining our Constitution to some degree. Our rhinos are far worse of a problem. You're better off voting for a radical leftist so that everybody understands that we have to have somebody that opposes every facet of these radical leftists. Bear in mind, keep faith, that even radical leftists do not have the constitutional ability to make changes and do these things. When they do, they are violating their oath of office and violating the Constitution. You know, when I was researching, you know, the 14th Amendment and the Congressional Globe, and reading up on these legislators in both the House and the Senate, and then I was looking at, you know, historical or reviews of history, like Wikipedia and so forth, and how these folks, these progressive Wikipedia sites and what have you, referred to these people who wanted to protect the freedmen from having their civil rights and followed the constitutional process in doing so, they want to refer to them as the radical right. And I'm going, oh my gosh, what a bunch of label lynching. And anybody that believes that the radical right was on the wrong side of history, I'm here to tell you, they are lying. They are telling you things that just don't add up. Who does not deserve the ability of freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the freedom to assemble with like-minded people in public and in private, you know, at the park or what have you? Again, that assembly is not for protesting. That's just being able to meet and converse, exchange ideas, what have you. Fact of the matter is that the left wants you to believe, and there's a reason why they, you know, even they do not get into the details of the 14th Amendment. The only thing they keep telling you is the 14th Amendment is about anchor babies, that, you know, it's constitutional for anybody to come here and have a baby because the way they want to interpret it. And secondly, that everybody has the right, you know, to protest and due process and all these other things. And they've perverted the intent and meaning of both of those things. So when we come back, we're going to get into what I want to share with you is the timeline of the Bolshevik Revolution and how this went down. Most people will tell you it happened in a matter of months. We will be right back and show you the years that this took. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so actually I haven't thanked you all for continuing to tune in. I truly appreciate it. I'm humbled by the loyalty of so many. And more importantly, I do realize that I probably wouldn't be on Red State Talk Radio if I didn't have as many people listening. But with this show has grown, it's grown a lot, but it's still in the magnitude of, you know, the type of reach we need to get this message going. This is why I'm constantly, I don't want to say haranguing, but this is why I'm constantly leaning on and getting folks into understanding. We need to spread this message out, and it can't. I can't do it. I mean, I don't have the money at this point to pay for advertisements on targeted audiences like Fox News and things like that. So, bottom line is, what we need is we really need to, you know, help you or convince you, motivate you to, you know, share to get people to start looking at this concept of Republic Review. This will really work. There's no doubt in my mind. When I you know, actually hold, I don't want to say hold somebody's hand, but when we sit down and we go through it and I help them look at this in the way that they can understand it, boom, the light comes on. I mean, it's just like that. what do you want to call it? It's like that little cartoon where you see the light bulb click on, bing. Anyway, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your continuing to listen. And again, I am truly humbled. So, you know, you can't understand what we're doing and what's going on unless you understand what has happened in the past. And I think the best time, the best timeline that one can actually refer to would be one that is actually, what is this? It's the Russian Revolution, and it's the British Library. And so if you actually look for the Bolshevik Revolution or the Russian Revolution timeline, you'll probably find the last, you know, year where, you know, the last few events that actually got Russia to fall. And I'm here to tell you that, oh no, there was a lot more involved. And you have to understand, historically, Russia was the country that had the largest percentage of slaves. If you understand that America, when we emancipated the slaves in America in the 1863, or when Lincoln did that, I think there was, depending on whose numbers you want to go by, some people said it was probably less than 6 million. Some people say it was up to 9 million. But that's still shy in the numbers of Russia. Russia itself had 22 million people who were emancipated, and those are probably shy numbers as well. The fact is, and I hope you caught that, 22 million serfs and slaves. The problem was that when the Tsar freed the serfs and slaves, he didn't really free them, and they were allowed, because of contractual obligations and labor issues, they still allowed these people to be treated like dirt. And so even though it may have been a feel-good moment, you know, the cockles in your heart just start glowing and you just, oh, this is so nice, but it really lacks substance. And so if you actually go through this, they talk about some of the key points that, you know, that led up to this revolution. And they really start with the 1860s to the 1890s. And in 1861, the Tsar Alexander passes the Emancipation Edict, ending serfdom in Russia, but keeps peasants tied to the land through continuing labor obligations. So they were still basically, most of these people were still basically serfs. In February 1880, this was basically, 19 years later, there was a failed attempt, an assassination attempt on Tsar Alexander II by blowing up his palace. However, this wasn't the first attempt. This was the fifth attempt. And it was, so they had five failed attempts in trying to kill the Tsar. On March 13th, 1881, a little over a year later, the Tsar Alexander II was assassinated by a member of the radical group People's Will. And so, and where did these people start getting these ideas of collectivizing and everything else? This was all, and if you start paralleling the Fabian Society, they already knew in Germany, because that's where the Marx school was. I forget the name of it. There was a very specific school that started indoctrinating world leaders and leaders of thought. I mean, William D. Du Bois or whatever, there were a lot of key black leaders that went to this school and came back embracing communism and the concept of collectivism. And everybody said, well, this is exactly what we need to do. And so in America, there was this huge movement as of the 1880s, and in the Russia and throughout Europe, This is one of the reasons why most people don't credit Marx for all of these world wars, and collectivism was the true cause, because people wanted to subjugate themselves to the states. However, most of the states of Europe had already learned their lessons of trying to do that and trying to preserve liberty, but people didn't want their liberty anymore. They wanted government to be able to dictate everything, or at least that's what they thought, and that's what they were sold by these Bolsheviks, by these Black Lives Matters, by these radical groups that are out for a very specific purpose. Okay, so in 1882, pogroms against Jews, or programs against the Jews, started spreading throughout Russia and the Russian Empire, which led to a mass migration of Jews out of Russia. Some of them stayed, and some of them, you know, later really, regretted the fact that they didn't leave sooner, because they didn't see the writing on the wall, so that when communism fell, they lost everything, and many of them died trying to get out. But the fact is that they started becoming divisive over religion and pointing at the Jews as the bad guys. Just like Germany a few years later, right? And this is why, if you read Thomas Sowell's Black Rednecks and White Liberals, he talks about middleman minorities and points to the Jews as probably the greatest culture that has aided different societies, but has usually become the scapegoat when things start going bad. Well, anyway, in 1891 and 1892, famine in Russia basically killed almost 500,000 people, less, but almost 500,000 people. And it, just like our depression and the lack of food and what America went through during those days, it changed the sentiments. I'm not sure how many of you have grandparents or parents that, you know, lived during the Depression, and how they behaved today. It was still driven by the same paradigm. You save, you keep. Most people, when they look at, as a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody that was pointing to this gentleman that has a lot of money. And this other guy goes, well, I kind of know that guy. And, you know, you look at him and this guy's, you know, 80s, 90s. And he says, well, this guy doesn't live like he has that kind of money. And I go, then you don't understand the paradigm of most people that went through the Depression. My grandfather was a millionaire. He was a well-established millionaire. However, nobody knew that. And if you look at how he lived, he drove an old Dodge Caravan. They lived in a small, humble home. They did not. Most people that become millionaires because they live within their means and they save money, and instead of paying interest, if you want to become successful, stop trying to, as Dave Ramsey says, stop trying to live like the other person and live within your means. You do that and you start saving money, you will actually see how much more successful you become in just your money management and so forth. So anyway, back to this timeline though. In 1896, a stampede in Moscow occurs during festivals following Nicholas II's coronation, as crowds worried that the supplies of free sovereigns would run out, rushed from the stalls to get them. This resulted in the death of over 1,300 people. And so if you look at this timeline, then they get into the 1900 to 1916, and they talk about the revolution and the Bloody Sunday. See, most people think the Bolshevik Revolution just, you know, happened really quickly. It did not. And as a matter of fact, if you start looking at America, what was the beginning of the American, you know, Bolshevik Revolution? In other words, it was in our face. There is a changing of the paradigm. And let's consider this our cultural war. And that cultural war was the 60s. That was the line, or the epoch, that said, we are heading for a communist revolution in America. And the funny thing is, the kids that were all involved in this were completely duped by those the propaganda and the entertainers. We'll be right back after this with that.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so if you start looking at this timeline, they start kind of putting it into blocks. And so they have this sub-timeline, January 1905 to June 1907. And it's a two-year period that starts with Bloody Sunday and a subsequent civil unrest, and ending with the coup of June 1907. The coup of June, which led to the dissolution of the Second State Duma of the Russian Empire, the arrest of some of its members, and a fundamental change in the Russian electoral law. In other words, Russia started using, let's just say, heavy-handed tactics. They started saying, you know, we're not going to tolerate this dissent and you know, these protests and so forth. And so they start moving down this path of going, hey, you know, we don't tolerate this. But this all got interrupted. Now, you got to understand that when you do not feel like something has been resolved, but all of a sudden, something else happens. Let's say you have a problem or a squabble with your brother or your neighbor or what have you. And then all of a sudden, Katrina hits or some natural disaster or something bad happens. And, you know, your focus on your enemy, this person that has just turned on you, that has done something really bad, this squabble, that you can't forgive, but you don't have time to fight that. You have to fight the storm. You have to rebuild after the storm. So, and this is how it always happens, that if you haven't rectified those issues, 9 times out of 10, after your distraction is done and over, you get back and focus on what the real problem was again. Those things that did not get resolved, that you demand, you know, and you see, get, you know, everything getting back to the old norm of, you know, tensions and heavy-handed government and so forth. And so what happened that created this distraction after 1907 was the first outbreak of World War I. And as they started building into when Germany declares war in July 1914, and I know it was 7 years later, but for 7 years, Russia was living under these, I'll call them draconian tactics, because it wasn't making the people feel better. It wasn't like giving them liberty. It was a form of statism. Here's the irony that these people wanted to, you know, take this new direction, but they wanted to jump from the fire pan or from the fry pan into the fire because they weren't jumping into a mode of government that was going to secure liberty. They were jumping into a mode of government that was even going to be worse. When you look at the famine that they had to deal with, 500,000 Russians died. A few decades later, when they dealt with the famine under Stalin, millions of people died. And some of that was deliberate because that was how evil that government was. So when you start looking at this timeline, there was this big interruption because of World War I. And so in 1917 was really, and this is where they start really focusing on the revolution and how things had happened. But you have to understand that they were pointing to a heavy-handed state. And if you look at how they've been pointing, how long have they been pointing in America that the police state is bad? The Libertarian Party has completely clung on to this. In some ways, people that are in the Libertarian Party, which was actually a conservative party, it was just not based on the concept of, you know, this religious freedom and or actually more of a moral grounds. They kind of stepped back and said, well, why do we have to, you know, we're not Christians or we're not ardent Christians. And we don't feel like, you know, this moral stance because of abortion and these other things. Because in 1971, when the Libertarians left the Republican Party, that was the beginning of the abortion stance. And they kind of separated themselves because they said, you know what, we believe people should be able to choose for themselves. And so they actually were ones that were leaning towards more of a classical liberal, but not on the moral side, and said, you know, we shouldn't have laws for moral purposes. Right, wrong, or indifferent. This was divisive, and we've been constantly dividing. The problem is that we start putting agendas into the political process instead of focusing on the Constitution. And this is why we have, and the Republican Party is culpable. The National Republican Party, who has been taking these stances of trying to go beyond the Constitution and trying to manage agendas, has been taking they're standing on the wrong ground. What we have to do, we need to shift the paradigm onto the Constitution. What is constitutional? What isn't constitutional? Because that's where government needs to be. It doesn't matter where you are as an individual. What matters is the government is founded and acting within the boundaries of the Constitution. If they are doing that, then they can't use your money for this agenda or that agenda. And everybody wins, if you understand what I'm saying. I mean, literally, everybody wins. Now, in context to what's going on today, when we see, you know, these radical insurgents who are saying they, you know, some people are saying, well, it's not, you know, anything. It's just autonomy. It's an autonomous zone. No. Do not play with words. Autonomy is not within the Constitution. Every state in the Union has its own sovereignty over all of that land. The federal government only has sovereignty over those things that are within the Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, as it defines the federal government's use of land. To be clear, the federal government does have a need for military training, so they do need some of these large bases for dropping bombs. Do they need that many bases for dropping bombs into? Oh, well, because we have, you know, the Air Force and the Navy and their different missions. They all have their own ranges and so forth. You know what? Maybe they need to consolidate these things. Maybe, you know, because they thought that this land was theirs in the first place, the federal government could just do what they wanted. The states really should have started challenging the federal government, saying, well, why do you need 7 bombing ranges? Why not, or however many they have, but why not, you know, for the different types of missions, use them as joint training ranges instead of making them just the Navy, just the Air Force, just the Army, and just the Marine Corps and so forth. We could easily get away from, and as a matter of fact, I truly believe that when you look at the military system has missions. It shouldn't have departments. And more importantly, the Army should not be a standing department. The Army should be the militia interface and creating standards, and it should be the militia, not the National Guard and the Army. I'm sorry, folks. The Army is not a constitutional standing within the United States Constitution. And they've been creating this, they've been justifying the existence and maintaining the existence of the Army for a long time, even long before the World War I. And the fact of the matter is, because Lincoln and the Union abandoned the Constitution and the militia, then that is where we began to truly pervert the concepts of the Army's role in our Constitution, or technically, and as I tell you, the militia is synonymous with the Army. But it seems like because they went down this path during the Civil War, they divided that and they basically said, we're not going to have a militia anymore. Well, okay, you don't want to have a militia anymore. Get 3/4 of the states to buy off on the concept that we are not going to have a militia, that we're going to allow you to create your own enforcement agency and have full control over it instead of the states. Because I'm telling you, I'd love to have that debate. Fact of the matter is, when we start looking at why we have all of these problems in America, it has more to do with the fact that we're not in compliance to the Constitution and that we're allowing these rampant unconstitutional acts and these unconstitutional paradigms to persist. We must challenge all of these paradigms by using the Constitution and constitutional standing. If we use the Constitution as our weapon and as our shield, we will win even these autonomous zones, these Black Lives Matters, Antifa protests, these radical leftist communist movement protests. We will actually be able to dispatch with actual justice based on the Constitution, the fact that they do not have a standing. They don't like what's going on. Then start articulating your points to government, and government needs to stand on the Constitution, or they get we disqualify, we remove them, we ban them for life. When we start putting the teeth and consequences that are in the Constitution to government, they will get the message and start complying. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we will be back with more. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.